From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from radio's golden age. I'm Jake Longwell. Opening the hour with an episode of X-1, the popular sci-fi radio series which aired on NBC from 1955 through 1958. This broadcast, Program 70 in the series, first aired on October 10th of 1956. Here is Colony.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents Tonight's story, Colony, by Philip K. Dick.
The existence of Planet Blue, the fourth in orbit around a G-type sun somewhere in the Aldebaran sector, was predicted by spectroscopic analysis and spatio-mathematic equations some 50 years before an exploring mission was dispatched to it. The research team, under Commander Stella Morrison of the Colonial Administration, went into orbit around Planet Blue at 0700 standard sidereal time. Authorized procedures were followed.
Aerial photography completed, Commander.
Anything show on the plates?
Well, Masterson was suspicious of these lines towards the poles, but the angles seemed to be coincidence.
They are not artifacts.
Glacial faults. Geological survey reports no volcanism.
Mm-hmm.
The launch is back. Dodge has a landing site pinpointed. Preliminary atmospheric tests look good. There's a 0.7 bulge in oxygen, but it's just enough to make you feel good. Looks like an open-air job. No pressure suits or condenser masks.
Well, that's precisely what they thought on Centauri 1. And the whole expedition was wiped out by spores.
Of course, I was assuming a favorable biocheck.
Mm-hmm.
Preliminary photographic survey, Mr. Wood.
Thank you, Dodge.
Do you want them played back here? We haven't transcribed the tape.
If you please, Lieutenant.
393. Al, pipe the photo tapes up here on 324.
Looks like a green world, all right. Punch up the tape, if you please, Lieutenant.
Orbital checks proved positive. The atmosphere and gravity Earth normal to three places on the Grayson scale. And the exploratory research ship, lowered itself by the Meyerson-Lay atmospheric skip method, came into a stall tail landing just before sunset on a day marked in the logs as Planet Fall Zero. The hatches remained sealed as a 2-mile perimeter was scanned by direct instrumentation. Major Lawrence Hall of Biosurvey reported EEG sweeps to the bridge.
Of course, it isn't conclusive. We've run into life forms that didn't broadcast a brainwave at all. The Gryllodon lizard on Ganymede. Skull acted as an effective shielding due to a heavy lead constituent in the body chemistry.
Major Hall, I am not interested in a lecture on extraterrestrial zoology. Is there or is there not life within the range of your instruments?
Well, I'm sorry, Stella. The readings show no electrical brain activity whatsoever, and that covers life down to the level of invertebrates. There may be a few worms turning out there, and unless they're thinking awfully hard about something, we wouldn't pick them up.
Well, thank you. I want preliminary drones out for sampling. How long do you think that will take?
Well, a thorough job, take about 2 weeks.
I have a schedule, Major. How long till you can give me a protective Schedule C clearance?
2 days. And I ought to check airborne spores and microorganisms.
Carry on, Major.
All right, Stella. I'll let you know if I turn up any special diseases on planet Blue.
Drone sample missiles were dispatched at sunrise. Air scoops, ground samplers, and vegetation choppers returned to base, and the bio team instituted full prescribed tests. Immediately identifiable airborne dangers were ruled out. Outside of the possible allergenic action of pollens, Planet Blue was ruled safe for normal exploratory procedures, and the real work of the survey was gotten underway.
Here's the morning report, Commander. 4 in sick bay, 3 ordered to light duty.
What happened?
Well, last night was liquor ration.
Oh.
Survey teams out in the field, bio crew under Major Hall, agronomy, ecological, geological, and deep map teams out.
Any reports back?
Deep map seems to think there's petroleum over to the north, and agronomy reports if you dropped a seed in this soil, you'd have to jump back to keep from being knocked over by the plant.
Mm, sounds pretty good.
Commander, Blue is about as likely a spot for colonization as has been turned up since Harvey's planet in 27.
Well, they'll be glad to hear that in Central. How long do you think until we can send back a clearance?
I've checked with department chiefs. They all estimate about 2 or 3 days more until they're satisfied. All except Bio.
Well, why is Major Hall dragging his feet?
I don't know.
Well, find out. And in the meantime, I'm going to call a staff meeting. Every day we can save on our report is important. If Blue is suitable for colonization, I don't want to waste a minute.
By planetfall plus 3 weeks, all departments had reported favorably except biology. Ecological survey pointed out the difficulty involved in the necessity of importing animal life, but this problem had already been met in the colonization of Gamma 2 and 3, when an entire ecology had been transported in frozen gene banks and fertilized and incubated on the site. Biology, however, still withheld a favorable report.
Look, Larry.
What is the secret, Stella? Cold formality on the bridge and Larry when you're in my lab?
Well, I'm serious. Well, I've just gotten an official query from Central. They want a fish or cut bait on Blue. Your department is the only one holding it up. We're 2 weeks behind schedule.
And the first colony on Vishnu was right on schedule and 7,000 died of green spot.
That was before the full bio check technique was worked out.
My dear, do you know how many different microorganisms there are in a cup full of dirt?
I'm not a freshman student of biology.
Oh, dear. And I was hoping I could tempt you into some field work.
Someday, Larry, you're going to make some remark in front of some junior officers or even enlisted personnel, and I'm going to have to call you on it.
Afraid for your dignity, my dear?
Look, I'm in charge of this expedition. My dignity happens to be a function of command, and as such, it's a survival factor.
Ah, well, then you had better take it easy at officers' mess. You know, I saw 2 biomates watching you climbing the ladder to the bridge. Do you know what their affectionate name for you is?
Major Hall. I'm serious. I want a bio clearance as soon as possible.
And you will get it. As soon as possible.
And when will that be?
When I'm satisfied.
Are the bugs here so dangerous that you're afraid of them?
No, on the contrary. We have yet to find a harmful life form.
Well, you didn't report that. If there are no harmful life forms...
No lice. No disease germs. No malignant virus.
Well, then what are you waiting for?
There should be. There should be at least one little fellow who could give you a common cold.
Look, sociology section found no native narcotic plant life. And inasmuch as there is no humanoid life, there is no bootlegging, gambling, immorality, and pornography either. By analogy, that would be a good reason not to colonize. Is that the idiotic logic you're following?
Microbiology is a little different, Stella. And anyway, what is the rush? Blue is something different. There's something peaceful in the air. Why rush to bring picnickers who will drop candy wrappers and fill the pools up with empty beer cans?
Larry, I have a planned board conference in 10 minutes. If you don't bring in some kind of a report by then, I'll have to supersede you under a Section 23.
Ah, yes, that's what happened on Vishnu, isn't it? Followed by Greenspot and the wagons to drag the corpses out of the colony street.
Never mind that, Major. I want a report.
In the biology section lab, Major Lawrence Hall continued to examine tissue samples from lower fauna and flora samples brought in from Planet Blue. He settled a container of prepared slides and flipped the switch on the electron microscope. Major Hall slid the first slide on the stage of the microscope and adjusted the focus knob.
Come on. There you are. All right, come on, kid. Eat something.
The microorganisms, a form of rotifer, displayed none of the characteristics of ferocity and aggression which were normal on several dozen other planets. Presently, however, Major Hall stopped whistling. Inasmuch as the two eyepieces of his microscope twisted suddenly around his windpipe and started to strangle him. Hall tore at them, but they dug relentlessly into his throat, steel prongs closing like the claws of a trap. With a convulsive effort, he managed to break free and fling the microscope from him.
Oh, that's crazy. It's better let go of my leg.
He kicked the microscope loose and drew his blaster. As the microscope scuttled away, rolling on its coarse adjustment knobs, he fired. The microscope disappeared in a cloud of metallic particles. The plans board of the research team was assembled in the officer's library. Commander Stella Morrison was outlining plans on a detailed aerial survey map.
This long, flat area is ideal for the actual city. It has an adequate watershed in the hills here, and weather conditions vary sufficiently to give the settlers something to talk about. There are large deposits of various minerals. The colonists can set up their own factories. They won't have to do any importing. Over here is the biggest forest on the planet. If they have any sense, they'll leave it. But if they want to make newspapers out of it, that's not our concern. Now, all reports are in except bio, and I think that before long we'll be getting...
Stella!
Major Hall, may I remind you that when the consul is in session, no one is permitted to interrupt...
Come to my lab.
Look, Hall, if you're not feeling well, you look a little sick.
Yes, well, I should be. My microscope just tried to strangle me.
What?
Oh, I see.
It almost got me, but I blasted it. Well, that's not the worst.
It isn't?
No. The microscope is still there. After I blasted it, I found it under the lab bench, untouched.
Look, Major, you sure you don't need a psych test?
Well, I don't know. I suppose it does sound a little...
You look post-trauma to me.
Huh? Oh. Well, you're right. Well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Commander.
Put Major Hall on psycho report. I think we'll have to proceed to order colonization here without him.
Major Hall proceeded to Psych Center and, inserting his ID card in the robot Neo Rorschach machine, he placed his hands on the contacts and activated the search and gestalt circuits. Presently, the green light flashed, indicating tentative diagnosis. Major Hall hit the response key.
Severe disturbance. Instability ratio above 10.
And that's over danger, isn't it?
Yes. 8 is danger. 10 is unusual, especially for a person of your index. Your norm is 4.
Yeah, I know.
I require more data to determine whether this unusual instability ratio is an aberrant reaction or is normal survival oriented.
Well, I can't tell you anymore.
It is illegal to hold back information during a robo-psych test. You will deliberately distort diagnosis, which is punishable by 6 months forfeiture of pay and allowances or such other penalty as a court-martial may direct.
Thanks a heap. Now look, do you record a high degree of unbalance for me?
There is a high degree of psychic disorganization. But what it signifies, or its etiology, I am unable to determine without further data.
Yeah. Okay, well, just take a tip from me. Stay away from homicidal microscopes.
That is an interesting Freudian slip. You undoubtedly mean homicidal maniacs, not microscopes. This indicates a possible maladjustment in the area of your specialty.
Why don't you go grease your id?
I will consider that suggestion.
Major Hall returned to the biosection lab and tested the atmosphere near the place where he had fired his blast gun at the microscope. The analysis showed a high density of metallic particles colloidally suspended in the air. In a state of confusion, with an emotional distress quotient of at least 0.742, he stripped off his uniform and entered the shower.
Oh.
Well, you can't expect anybody to believe a story like that. I must be off my rocker.
Major Hall stepped out of the shower, reached for one of the towels on the rack. The towel wrapped around his head and yanked him against the wall. Rough cloth pressed over his mouth and nose. He fought wildly, pulling away. All at once, the towel let go. Major Hall crawled out of the shower and proceeded to dress. His belt, heavy canvas with reinforced metal links, tried to get him around the waist and crush him. The belt, being a heavy-duty issue, was strong, and they rolled on the floor until Hall was able to reach his blaster. He threw himself down on a chair to regain his breath. The arms of the chair started to close around him, but this time he was ready.
Major, I don't believe you were announced.
Look, Commander, Stella.
You're armed. You know that regulations
are... Sorry, Stella, this is important.
Well, what do you want? I have a report here from the robo-psych tester. It says you've hit a ratio of 10 within the last 24-hour period. We've known each other for a long time. Larry, what's happening to
Stella, I told you. A little while ago, my microscope tried to strangle me. Then when I was getting out of the shower, a bath towel tried to smother me. I got by that. And while I was dressing, my belt...
Wood, in here on the double.
And I finally blasted that. And then an armchair beside...
Yes, Commander.
Stand by a moment.
Stella, will you listen to me? This is serious. Ordinary objects suddenly turning lethal. Maybe this is what we've been looking for. Maybe this is...
Your microscope tried to kill you.
I told you, its stems got me here around the windpipe.
No one else saw this happen.
No. I blasted it, and then I found it again, perfectly all right.
I see, Wood.
Yes, ma'am.
Get two guards and take Major Hall down to Captain Taylor in sick bay. Have him confined until he can be sent back to Terra for examination.
Listen, Stella...
Sorry, Major. You can't prove this story, and we'll just have to assume it's a psychotic projection on your part. And we can't afford to have any psychotics running around loose on this planet. Wood, carry on.
You'll be all right, Hall. Back on Earth, they can clear a thing like this up in a few weeks.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm just out of my mind.
Here we are. Captain Taylor. Captain Taylor. He should be in. Captain. Well, the hatch isn't locked. Taylor. What's the matter?
That scatter rug is shortened. Take it and pull. Open up. Quick, before he's crushed. Grab that rug.
Now hear this. Now hear this. General alarm. General alarm. Emergency stations. Emergency stations. Condition red. Sidearms will be issued to all personnel. General alarm.
Captain Taylor tells me the rug came from Terra. His grandmother braided it.
That's what I was trying to tell you. It was not the rug that attacked them.
Then what was it?
Something that looked like this rug. And it was something that looked like a microscope that went for me. And the towel and the belt.
You mean there's some life form that can imitate anything?
Yes, it seems so. And it's deadly.
Hey, Charlie, general alarm. Get up out of that sack. Hey, what'd you do with my gloves? Oh. Hey, where'd I get two pair? Well, eighty, meeny, money. Mo. One pair of gloves is the same as the other. Hey, these gloves are moving. How do you like that? These fool gloves are going for my blast pistol. Charlie, is this one of your crazy electronic gags? Did you rig my gloves? Hey, look out for that pistol! Look out! Commander, there's another casualty. Lieutenant Dodds.
What happened?
I don't know. He seems to have shot himself.
Oh, no.
Stella, I think that I have something.
Dodge is dead.
Look, we know that this thing can camouflage itself. It can imitate any object it leans up against. All right, now, listen to this.
Larry, we've got
This is the answer. It's a tape from Captain Galt. He was out on bio survey. He had a throat mic on. He was talking to the operator at base. Now, listen to this.
Head for home now. What's this emergency about? Hourglass Stella having hysterics? That's funny. I swear I parked my bucket over by those trees. Well, it's here anyway. Heat up some coffee for me. I'll be in a couple. Yeah, that's funny. There's another bucket over by the trees. Where'd this one come from? Let me out. The thing's stuck. It's folding up around me. Joe? Joe, get a squad out here.
Transmission just stopped. All right, now we're up against some organic form of life, and there should be some way to destroy it. We've already blasted a few, but we don't know how many more there are. Maybe it's an infinitely divisible substance, some kind of protoplasm.
We've had over 12 casualties reported, and there's still 5 teams out in the field.
All right, it's a lethal life form. Now that explains why we found everything else harmless. Nothing could compete with this. We have mimic plants of our own, the twisty slug on Venus, but nothing that goes this far.
It can be killed, though. You said that yourself.
If it can be found. You can't tell. Clothes, rugs, drapes, chairs. We can't tell which is which. We've got to try to find some poison, some spray that will destroy them wholesale.
Oh, no.
What's the matter?
In the corner. I never noticed 2 briefcases over there before. There was only one, I think. How are we going to know?
Shortly after the final casualty report of 30 dead and 12 wounded, Major Hall sealed off the bio quarters and moved in with a team from chem section, all dressed in corrosive resistant suits.
Well, I'll make sure that you've got a tight seal on the neck joint.
What are you going to do, Major?
I've got a combination of hydrogen and arsenic under pressure, arsine gas. That'll give us an idea of how much they've infiltrated. Arsine is deadly to humans, so check your helmets. Now, Sergeant, I don't want any panic blasting. Arsine is inflammable. All right. Release the valve.
As the gas filled the room, the first to go was a filing cabinet, which melted and oozed to the floor. Scars and test tubes. The lab was sealed off and a meeting held in Commander Morrison's quarters.
Well, it's protoplasm, all right. You could see that when the mimic shape melted. It was just as big as your hand. May resemble the simple unicellular protozoa. Gigantic in size compared to microorganisms.
Can we spray them?
Arsine disturbed them. And I suppose enough might kill them. But we haven't got that much. We can't flood the planet. We wouldn't be able to use our blasters, and it's lethal to humans.
We'll have to pull out.
Stella, I'm afraid you don't quite understand. We can't take the chance of carrying them back to the system disguised as a boot or a towel or anything. And they seem to multiply by binary fission. It wouldn't take long to overrun Earth and the rest of the system.
If we stay here, they'll pick us off one by one.
We could have arsine brought in or some other poison, but that would destroy most of the other life on the planet along with it.
Then we'll have to burn the planet clean. Wood?
Yes, ma'am.
Set up a call to system monitor. I'm going to get the unit off here, out of danger. After that, we can work out the best way of cleaning off this planet.
You'll run the risk of taking them back to Terra.
Can they imitate higher life forms? Can they masquerade as humans?
Apparently not. They seem to be limited to inorganic subjects.
Then we'll go back without any inorganic material.
But our clothes, they can imitate the synthetic fibers, belts, gloves, boots.
We're not taking our clothes. We're going back without anything at all.
Oh. Oh, I see.
Get me a beam to central monitor immediately.
The nearest cruiser was 2 light hours away, Captain Daniel Davis commanding. Tight beam communication was established after coordinates were flashed from Central Monitor.
This is Captain Davis. Can you read me?
I read you. Commander Morrison here. Captain, you are to make a planetfall as soon as possible at coordinates to be supplied you. We are going to board your ship naked.
Naked?
That's right.
That's, well...
When will you land?
At about 1,500 hours, I'd say.
Captain, would it be possible for your men to...
I'll have my crew below decks. We'll land on robot control.
Thank you. Wood, sign off the transmission.
Yes, ma'am.
There was some objection among the enlisted personnel, particularly in the women's quarters. The ship landed at 1,200 hours, 3 hours sooner than expected.
All hands disrobe immediately. All personnel report to field, ready to embark.
So soon? I didn't hear the ship land.
It's there, all right. We'd better go. Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Larry, you go ahead. I'd rather get ready alone.
Parked in the center of the landing field was a cruiser, its hull pitted and dented by meteor strikes. It lay motionless, with no sign of life aboard. A crowd of naked people was moving across the field, blinking in the bright sunlight. Commander Stella Morrison, without any sign of rank apparent, paused on the ramp and spoke to Major Lawrence Hall beside her.
Larry.
Yeah? What is it?
I'm scared.
Why?
I don't know.
Psychological reaction. Forget it. It's a reaction to nudity carried over from early childhood. Come on, we're holding up the line.
Larry, I want to go back.
Stella, look. Now, at least Davis kept his promise. There are no enlisted men lining the hatches to enjoy the view. You see, it's dark in there. There's nothing to worry about. Come on. Up you go.
The last of the research team filed into the interior of the ship, and the hatch closed behind them. At exactly 1,500 hours, Captain Daniel Davis landed his ship in the center of the field. Automatic relays opened the main lock hatch and lowered the ramp. Davis and his staff sat in the control cabin waiting.
Well, how do you like that? Where are they? Well, maybe the whole fool thing is a joke. We've waited an hour already.
They waited. And waited. But no one came.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Double Dare by Robert Silverberg, which demonstrates that pride can lead to much worse than a fall. It can put a man out on a limb and keep him there. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Colony, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Philip K. Dick and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Frederica Chandler, John Larkin, James Stevens, Larry Robinson, Bill Quinn, and Alan Bergman. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Hear music in the Morgan Manor. Russ Morgan, live weekday mornings on NBC Bandstand.
X-1, with the episode Colony from October 10th, 1956 on NBC. It's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you'd like to get in touch with the Radio Theater, our email address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And our blog and website is qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com. You're listening to program number 1922. Wrapping up the hour with some classic sketch comedy from across the pond, as we have an episode of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again, a very popular sketch comedy series which ran on the BBC from 1964 through 1970, and later revived in 1973, running through 1976. Starring, among others, David Hatch, John Cleese, Bill Oddie, and Timbrook Taylor. Many consider this series to be a forerunner to Monty Python's Flying Circus. This broadcast, episode 6 of season 4, originally aired on May 28th of 1967. Cleopatra and Caesar.
Who first revealed John Cleese in his bathtub?
We did you miss it?
Who first revealed that Bill Oddie had shrunk in the wash?
We did you miss it?
Who first called Timbrook Taylor a sweetie?
I did. I mean, we did. Did you miss it?
You did.
Yes.
Who first noticed the difference between Joe Kendall and David Hatch?
We did. Did you spot it?
Who first revealed that life as we know it was possible in Humphrey Barclay?
We did.
All these and more were in our program in April 1936. Did you miss it?
Yes.
So did I. Switch off quickly and you'll miss this week's too, yes. Yes, with the ragtime Ichiku boop-boop-doop of the Angus Prune tune, we once again tear the dust sheets off Timbrook Taylor, John Cleese, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, and Bill Oddie. And here to express your collective astonishment is John Otto Cleese.
Oh, no! It's I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again! Oh, yeah!
Good morning.
Ah, good morning, sir. A thousand welcomes to Wrigley's Bank, your friendly bank service. This is the bank that is best, national and international. The bank, here and all over the world, now and forevermore, amen. You don't want any money, do you?
Well, I was...
Well, it's highly inconvenient, you grotty little man, creeping in and out of our bank asking for money. Damn it, we make it difficult enough for you to catch us in, only being open from 12 to 2. I suppose you're a client, are you?
Yes.
Yes. Well, that's what they'd look like, this. Disgusting. No. What do you want, then? Hurry up, it's 10 to 2.
Well, I want some traveler's checks.
Well, we won't get through that in 10 minutes.
But please, look,
I give you some traveler's checks. It upsets our books.
Oh.
It's taken years to balance them up. We've had a couple of quiet months, and then you come along.
I'll pay for them.
You're telling me you will.
With cash.
Where is this cash, then?
It's in my account.
Where's that?
Here.
Well, I'm not giving you any of our money.
Oh, can't you take a check?
Not without identification. You need your birth certificate, passport, driving license, baptism certificate.
Yeah.
There's a photograph of yourself signed by a medical practitioner of 7 years standing. Also by a justice of the peace, a clerk in holy orders, a qualified pilot, three nuns, and Alec McTavish.
Who? Who's he?
Alec McTavish is a Scottish farmer living in Tierra del Fuego. That usually stumps them.
Look, I've got 12-pound notes.
They don't make 12-pound notes.
No, I mean, I've got 12 pounds in £1 notes.
Well, let's have a look at them then. Hurry up or I'll bite your ears.
Oh.
Right, well, I'm not having that one for a start.
Why not?
Oh, it's filthy. So is that one.
But,
grief, so is... And that. I'm not giving you our nice, clean traveller's checks for these tatty old things. Where have they been?
In my pocket.
With your handkerchief?
Yes.
Yes, I thought so. Filthy hat. Why can't you keep your handkerchief in your wallet like I do? You haven't been blowing your nose on these notes, have you?
No!
All right. I'll take these five and here's £3 worth of traveller's cheque.
Three? I'll give you five.
Yes, but your notes are second-hand, aren't they? Oh. I'll give you 60% of them. Can't say fairer than that.
Fairer than that.
Oh, you can. All right, I'll give you 80%. £4 it is.
I can't have a holiday on £4.
Well, you could have a very, 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 very small one.
No, can I have my money back?
No.
Why not?
It's 2 o'clock. We've closed. Get out!
Country people have very strange habits. They dance around maypoles, they Morris dance, they folk dance, and they spit. So I put on my plastic Mac and taking my BBC tape recorder and my BBC voice with me, went down to Nether Wapping to interview two of the very last British folk dancers. I spoke to them.
Well, Reuben and I have been doing folk dancing for as long as I can remember.
And how long's that?
Fortnight. My memory's not what it was 3 weeks ago. The one in the green with the bells and the antlers on his head is my brother Reuben, and the one in the brown with the collar is my dog, Reuben. Very confusing. Reuben, come here and say a few words to the gentleman.
A few words to the gentleman.
You should see him trolling the pole. Troll your pole for him, Reuben. Nah, you see, he's shy of strangers.
Well, what makes him more relaxed?
£5 note.
I'm sorry, I haven't any cash.
He'll take a check.
Well, the BBC will send him one.
Oh, are you that, Reuben? You're being paid by the BBC for pulling your troll. Take it away, baby.
I'm pointing the mariners, me boys. Rut hard the stag. Die for the queen. Heave ho, whoop, heave ho. For the good times are coming. Come in and sit down. That's an old folk joke, that is.
Reuben is almost completely naturally stupid, sir. He's village postman all winter and village idiot all summer. He's one of the best idiots around these parts, sir.
May I now rut the stag?
What's rutting the stag?
This is one of his speciality dances, sir. It's a satire on contemporary morals in Birmingham.
I see that. And when do you do it?
On All Idiots Night, which is the third Tuesday following the first Saturday after the second Monday of Halloween, next to the Thursday but one following the waning of the moon consequent on Ash Wednesday. Unless it rains.
And if it does?
3rd of January.
Well, perhaps I could persuade Reuben to rut the stag for the BBC.
No, sir, you couldn't.
Well, what could?
£40.
Would you say a word for us before you rut the stag?
Before I rut the stag, yes, gentlemen. Folk dancing is a tradition. It's always been done in this part of the world, except nowadays when fewer and fewer folk are dancing. It's dying out. The whole tradition is passing away and dying out. And to my mind, it's like the Ice Deadford. It can't be too soon for me.
Get back! Get back, you ugly savage brute! Get back when I say I'll show you his master! Get back! Get back! Now, up! Hop, hop, watch it, you monster. Get back.
John, darling, please leave Tibbles alone. You've been tormenting him ever since you got up, and now it's Tuesday.
He's got to be trained, hasn't he? He's got to be trained. Get back now on the stool. Get back. Fed up with having puddles all over the house.
Well, why don't you mend the roof and stop making his life a misery? You blame everything that goes wrong on that poor little kitten.
He's not a poor little kitten. He's an ugly, savage brute. Get back! Look at those claws and flashing eyes and slavering jaws. And listen to that noise he makes, roaring and snarling.
Darling, he is not roaring and snarling. He's mewing piteously. And so would you if you were made to stand on a stool with all four legs tied together. With a muzzle over your face and a wardrobe hanging from your tail.
Well, he's dangerous. I'm afraid he might attack you.
He's not dangerous, John, and you know it. Oh, John, why are you so cruel? Why must you torture defenseless creatures?
Fun.
What have they done to you? It was the same with that fly yesterday.
I had to kill it. Flies carry disease.
Yes, but you could have killed it with a fly spray instead of pulling off its wings, throwing it in a vat of boiling oil, shooting it with a double-barrel shotgun, and then putting its head on the gatepost as a warning to other flies.
Well, they have to be taught a lesson. Anyway, it was a very stupid fly.
Get back!
You see, I take my eyes off it for one moment and it moves.
John, it was only breathing.
I'm going to teach you to beg. Come on, beg, beg. Come on, Tibbles, up, up, up.
Oh, John, please stop trying to train things. I can't stand it anymore. I'm going to put Tibbles out and I'm going to bed.
Put that cat back. Put it back, I say. Back, back, wife.
Put it back when I tell you. Will you do as I say? Put it back.
Oh, shut up. What do you think I am? Another pathetic creature that you can hurt and beat and bend to your will? I'm finished. Do you hear? Finished. From now on, you're on your own.
Be careful or I'll set Tibbles on you.
Oh, don't be so stupid. Tibbles couldn't hurt anyone.
No, couldn't he? Couldn't he? Just watch this, then. Kill, Tibbles. Kill.
After all that excitement, I expect you'd like a drink. So let's join W.E. Oddie in a pub where the dear little chap is singing a drinking song. Actually, one bit of lemon and he falls over.
Come, gentlemen, join me. The night is still young. There's ale to be drunk and a song to be sung.
Hey!
Drink, drink, everyone drink. Raise up your glasses and let's hear them clink. What's it to be?
Beer!
Beer! Drink. What'll you have then?
Can I have a glass of milk, please?
Beer! Now listen here, barman, I've got an idea.
I'm sorry, we're closing, sir.
It's still dry, so give us more beer.
Yeah, time, gentlemen,
drink,
please.
Drink, beer!
More beer!
Raise up your drink.
I'm closing the bar now.
Your glasses and let's hear them clink.
Now,
down with the beer and up with the song. Join in the chorus and all sing along. Where are you?
I'm just watering the geranium.
Get out,
Chopper! Drink, drink, everyone drink. Raise up your glasses and let's hear them king. Tell me, what's it to be?
Where's my money?
Hello, hello. What's been going on here, then?
Just a little drink, Constable.
Oh, I don't mind if I do.
Gentlemen, this is a story to stir your spirit. A tale of a beautiful woman and the passionate love of two men.
Oh.
We present the magnificent 6½ in the decline and fall of the entire Roman Empire, including Cleopatra, or Jeremiah Pig and the transvestite hippo. The year 45 BC. The mighty civilization of Greece is beginning to crumble. The Roman Empire is fraught with faction. Egypt is ever turbulent in its last throes of greatness. Gaul is divided into three parts. Chelsea are in the cup final. And there's a deep depression over southern England. Even Rome itself is a city of unrest.
Go to sleep!
But Caesar, the great general, recently returned from the Punic Wars, takes time off to relax in the Roman baths.
Aha! Lycus, run to me and kneel at my feet. Wait till I get out. right now. Oh, Caesar, even now I have returned with the smell of battle still upon me.
So that's it.
No. I've come from the Gallic Wars.
So you've been eating Gallic again.
Yes, that's it. And my news is heavy.
Give it to me.
Oh, it is heavy. Yes. Very sad, sad news, sir, oh, Caesar. But I fear you know already. I see how you're trembling.
I'm freezing to death, you fool. Give me a towel.
I haven't one. Your legions are defeated in Gaul. Hannibal is even now crossing the Alps. Antony has fled to Egypt, perhaps to conspire against our city. It is rumored that even in the Senate, there are those who would see you dead. Our city is sick, sick. Oh, Caesar, the gods are angry. They're doomed. What are we to do? Help us, Caesar. What are we to do?
I'm sorry, I was looking for a towel. What were you saying?
Sir, I smell dissent.
Oh, good. You like it. It's Roman Spring. It's a new one. Just on the
Caesar,
market.
You know, the city needs leadership and truth. Let the people see you for what you really are.
Now, I must find a towel first. And then...
You must speak to them. Speak to them in some public place.
All right. What's on at the forum?
Sound of Music.
Very well. I shall speak during the interval. Or maybe right through it.
Why not right through the Sound of Music?
These things having been said, Caesar was by so much the more, therefore, notwithstanding the cohorts, by to or from, having been drawn a battle line for a long time, however.
Oh, I hate Latin.
Friends, Romans, hovercraft, lend me your ears. I come to bury Caesar, not to... No, hang on. Sorry. Try it in Latin. Cibios Romae, hic ego antebellum hic castris sum hic gestata hic divis, fias hic nobis hic... Have you got a glass of water? Now...
No.
Look here, mob. I hear that someone is conspiring against my person and my person doesn't like it. And neither do I.
Caesar, there's only one thing for it.
Resign.
No, you must consult the oracle and see what fate has in store so you may meet all danger and fight it till the end.
I'd rather resign.
No, we must know the omens.
Now, of course, the Romans were in the habit of telling the future by means of omens. The omens of the Romans. They carved up little furry animals like bush babies, and then they discerned amazing portents by the use of entrails, and all that entrails. I know all this very well on account of what? I am an oracle. In fact, oracle very well years ago that I was forewarned by the left ventricle of a possum that I would in future life become one John Otto Cleese. Anyway... This is the BBC Rome service, and here are the 9 o'clock intestines. 1, 2, 3, 4, intestine. There's a nasty... There's a nasty giblet centered just south of Carthage, which could well bring scattered showers this afternoon. And 3 varicose veins spreading north, which may well put the mockers on the common market. But if I'm not much mistaken, this ruptured liver means I'm going to have a most unpleasant lunch. And now the door will open, a man will enter, and I'll say, "Good morning, sir. I believe you are Caesar."
Amazing. How did you know?
I've seen you on the coins.
Then what of my future? Have you anything to tell me?
Well, let's see. Your toga is torn.
What does that reveal?
Do you want an answer?
I think I'd rather you didn't tell me. No. What else?
Well, from this, I'd say that you should go to Egypt.
So be it. Gropius! I must go to Egypt to crave the help of Antony, he who may save me or break me. I must struggle alone against my destiny, stagger through the scorching desert under the burning sun. On and on I must go, risking body and soul. I must battle against the dunes, the heat. No air, no water, just one man. I see them marching on and on. But wait! I have a better idea. What? You go.
Oh, no!
And so Caesar went to join the camel train.
Sorry, sir, only camels on this train.
And so they forced him to trek alone across the sand.
What a dirty trek.
On and on he trudged,
trudge, trudge, on, trudge.
Till at last he came to Alexandria in the land of Egypt. By the time he reached the city gate, his lips were cracked and his face was ashen.
What?
Ashen, ashen.
All fall down.
As he knelt there, he shouted at the gate.
Rotten hell gate!
There was immediate response.
I'm a gate and don't shout at me.
And a guard ushered him inside.
What?
Ushered, ushered.
All fall down.
Look, why do you keep doing that?
Well, you see, it's a sort of hay fever, you see, you get from going across the desert sands.
I see.
You develop what they call a sans sneeze.
Sans sneeze?
A bump's a daisy. Gone.
May, he was conducted to a great marble hall where he was given some great marbles. And then...
I am Caesar. Where is my old friend Antony?
It is I!
Antony!
Ha! Caesar! Come, you must meet my queen, but first, are you hungry?
Yes, I am.
Then try this.
Ah, her splendid a custard with fruit and cream and sponge pudding.
A mere trifle.
Jelly good.
But look, here comes Cleopatra.
Oh! Antony!
The great queen swept into the room.
Ami, is this the queen that holds each man her slave?
Ooh, good.
At this point, we would like to emphasize that Tim Brooke Taylor is playing both Cleopatra and Caesar. Very badly.
Cleopatra, this is Caesar, hot from Rome.
Oh, quick, let me have him before he cools down.
But tell us, Caesar, why are you here?
My people are unsettled.
Is it something they ate?
Yes, me, and I ate them too. I can't stand them. I want you to come back to Rome with me and bring your queen. I need a good boost.
Ooh, glad you like it.
So you'll come?
Yes.
No.
What?
No, 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 no.
Oh, blow your Roman nose.
Oh, sorry.
Quickly, let us leave.
To Rome?
Anywhere after that.
And so the great party set out across the desert. Antony rode on a camel while 17 slaves carried his baggage.
Careful, you're bumping me.
Halfway through the third day, Caesar called out,
"Look on the horizon, the seven hills of Rome."
"No, no, no, it's three maidens and an Amazon sunbathing."
"Think about it."
"Onwards, it's Rome or bust."
"That's a clue."
But eventually they did reach the ancient city.
Ah, Rome, sweet Rome.
The people had turned out in force, and fives and sixes. And as they marched through the streets...
"Listen, sire, they're singing your praises."
"Your praises."
Antony and his queen rode on a wagon, and Cleopatra arranged her seat so all could see.
"Cool, look at that seat."
"You a queen."
"Hooray!"
At this, Antony burst out in anger.
"Oh, spit!"
"Cleopatra's my queen."
"Not any longer."
"I want her back."
"All right, now I'll take her front."
"No, Cleopatra! Cleopatra, I'm taking you."
"No, I'm taking you."
"There's only one way to settle it."
"How?"
"Well, I think we're in the right place."
"You mean?"
"Yes, footballs at 50 paces."
"No, no, no, no."
"To the end."
And the two teams are lining up, Caesar numbering from right to left, number one, Caesar. And it looks as if Antony's playing in a 0-0-1 formation. And the whistle goes, and right away it's Caesar on the attack, but Antony's taken the ball off him.
"Can I have my ball back?"
But this time it's Caesar over the halfway, Antony rushing back into defence.
"Oh, ready, fence."
But he's up again and he's got it. And now Antony's breaking away, passes to the left. Antony moving forward inside to Antony. Long ball to Antony. Antony's got it. Coming down the wing, he beats one man inside. He beats the same man. He cuts him round, identical man. And he's only got one man immediately. He's round him and he's up to Caesar. Caesar doubling back. No, he's tackling him. He has got it. No, he's Antony. Yes, he has. No, Antony's got the ball. Antony penalty area is up to the post. Caesar to the left. Antony's going to shoot. He shoots. He shoots. He's done it. He's scored. He's scored.
Caesar is beaten.
Oh, fate. Fate. My fate are killing me. Ah!
And so, the having been defeated Caesar, moreover, for a long time notwithstanding, in the by so much the more battle line, having not been, but who also was. But even as he lay there in his football shorts, a Roman maiden knelt gently by him and made one last tender observation.
I never knew he had such bony knees.
Yes, this was the nobliest Roman of them all. Endeth this week's Comedy of Errors. If you were listening, the voices you heard were those of Timbrook Taylor, John Cleese, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, and the part of Bill Oddie was played by Porky the Pig. Little Billy Odd wrote the songs, and the music was by Sweet Davy Lee, with arrangements by his henchman, Leon Cohen. Hench the mistakes. The scripts were by Lizzie Evans, Eric Idle, and Bill Oddie, with additional material by Derek Farmer and Graham Chapman. Humphrey Barclay was the man behind the production. A long, long way behind. Yes, well, so there we are with nothing but a week of anticlimax to look forward to until once again you hear the golden words of John Otto Cleese.
Oh, no! It's the Wonder Show!
Get away now!
And with that broadcast of I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again from May 28, 1967, we've come to the end of this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. Thank you, as always, for your company. Please join me again soon for more classic sounds from radio's golden age. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.